Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. We are actually almost done with the vetoes of the Department of Transportation. Now, one of the things that kind of bothered me as I was looking at some of the news and so forth over the weekend. Actually, I don't know. I don't want to say it bothered me. But, you know, over the weekend, we heard that Aaron Rodgers, you know, was able to make his own decision. And he laid it out. He said that, you know, the shot could actually cause more harm and more problems than him just getting sick by COVID and recovering on his own, but using his immune system instead. And so he chose not to having had that conversation with his doctor, he chose not to actually, you know, get the shot. And it's caused a hubbubaloo amongst the, you know, the NFL teams and so forth. But the thing I'm thinking in completely different space, as a matter of fact, I've seen some people on social media saying, you know, God is, you know, imposing, just regarding, you know, Aaron Rodgers and like these, I've seen some assertions or associations that God is influencing him. You know, just remember that there was a point in time years back when he called out, I think it was Russell Wilson, when they beat the Green Bay Packers, you know, that God blessed them. And, you know, Aaron Rodgers says, I don't think God blessed him any more than anybody else, you know. And he was very, I don't think he's a very religious guy. But putting all that aside, I think this is interesting because how many people that are Aaron Rodgers fans that were, you know, outright, you know, hardcore vaccinations, you got to get vaccinated. Did Aaron Rodgers influence the, you know, those jock heads that, you know, love Aaron Rodgers and live and die Green Bay football or what have you? Did that make an impact? Because if it took Aaron Rodgers to make the comment that everybody else, and actually he could have said a lot better. He could have said basically that the federal government doesn't even have the power to, you know, to compel us to do these things. Why is it that we're facing this kind of compulsion today? Everybody should be able to make the decision. I made my own. You should make yours, but you shouldn't try to make other decisions for them. Okay, so anyway, just something. Well, I hope you enjoyed the Rumble show yesterday, if you tuned in live. And, you know, we'll probably do this every Tuesday for a while because I know that there's a lot to understand of the Constitution for David Torres, his audience, and so forth. I mean, not that they don't understand, you know, the Constitution to some degree, but I guess I lend a little bit more depth to the matters at hand. Anyway, if you're looking for free classes, if you're looking for learning about the Constitution, don't waste your time on Hillsdale College. Go to constitutioneducation.us. And if you're, and I know it may not be as polished and, you know, you may not get materials and that type of stuff, at least you'll get the truth because Keith Broders will give you the truth. And actually, we will be getting Keith Broders in interviews and we're going to start having time and conversations with people that we're working with, different people that we are working with. John Gentry is going to become a regular for this radio show. And what I mean by that is we interviewed him a while ago, and we aligned a lot. It was just that, unfortunately, not everybody has had the time to actually read all of these different documents. So I don't want to claim an unfair advantage. I stick to my words. Reasonable people equally informed seldom disagree. The problem is that middle part, that getting people equally informed. So I'm here to help. I'm here to try to give people the documents they need to help them get there. Because just like the framers, once everybody has read the same stuff, it makes it so much easier for everybody to agree. Now, when you start dealing with people who decide to interpret the Constitution in ways and in latitudes that are outside those terms and definitions provided by the ratification debates, and they refuse to embrace the ratification debates, then they've got it coming to them. As far as I'm concerned, they deserve what they get, right? Okay, so our comment line, 425-270-5416. And you know, I actually bypassed Timber Nation. I don't want to do that. These guys are great. They deliver the goods. They deliver quality product. And I want you, if you're looking to getting good quality furnishings, you got to go to Timber Nation. You got to. Anyway, radio dust covers. These are not expensive covers, but they wrap around your electronics so that the dust doesn't permeate into your electronics. It allows you to clean the top before you remove them. It allows you to, you know, not worry about having to clean those pieces of equipment, clean up around them, and then take the tops off if it's been months, a couple of years, or what have you. It's a lot easier to keep everything plugged in and set up and covered than it is to pack it back in the box every time you're done with it. That takes a lot of time. And you are susceptible to damaging your equipment because it just takes one little mistake, right? And the next thing you know, oh, crap, that's going to be costly. And I know you probably know what I'm talking about. Anyway, I want to just kind of move forward. What we'll probably do is we will probably look at, for because we're wrapping up, we'll probably look at next the 11th Amendment and the 12th Amendment next in our next episode, because we should be wrapping up today what Monroe and Madison had said as Andrew Jackson cites them and then moves forward with his veto message to say, you guys just can't do this. We have to amend the Constitution. Some other stuff that we want to do is I'm going to actually give you a letter. I'm going to read a letter that was written by James Madison in response to a letter he received from John G. Jackson. I think between now and the end of the year, we're going to want to find some time for the 14th Amendment, 14th Amendment to kind of go through that, as well as giving you some highlights, just some highlights out of the Federalist Papers. We're also going to be doing, you know, the Republic Review argument process. Actually, we've already done that once. I think we should go through it possibly again. And what we want to do, I was going to read the Bill of Rights, but I don't think we're going to have time between now and December 15th to, you know, get through a lot of this stuff. But if we do, we will. But what we do want to do is we would like to cover, because I think these are really critical things to understand, ex post facto laws and bills of attainder, as well as the Electoral College, and we want to talk about committees of safety. But in between this curriculum, what I will probably be injecting before we do the 11th Amendments, I need to start again. I need to go back to, and we're going to talk about how to start building a movement in your county. I think we need to talk about who the critical players are, who you have to go to first, and you have to persuade them to do their job. And if they're not going to do their job, then that right there is your first obstacle. You need to find somebody within law enforcement in your county or somebody with good credentials on the Constitution, a lawyer or what have you, that understands the Constitution, to basically, you know, take up and challenge your sheriff to replace him. But we'll get into the county operations and we'll give you the layout of, you know, what's important, what you have to do, because we just kind of covered this. But now, as we've laid out these roles, responsibilities, and so forth, or I should say, of creating a constitutional county, what those roles are and so forth, what we want to do is kind of give you some I'll just say, how do you do this? Well, this is what you got to start on. You got to start on this. You got to do this kind of research. And you also need to start planning events. You need to start looking for places, venues to have events, and so forth. I'm here to help, and I'm not from the government. And I believe everybody has the ability, if you care about the direction of this country and you recognize that we still have some time to stop and turn it around, even in the bluest of states, from Washington State and Minnesota, New Jersey. We're working in many of the blue states. We hope to get started in New Jersey, as a matter of fact. And so these people that we're working with in these dark blue states, and as a matter of fact, Catherine Dern will probably bring her on to talk about her paradigm of, you know, because she calls the government the, I think it's a corrupt, it's like a an organized crime syndicate. That's what she calls it. She calls the government that is operating an organized crime syndicate. Well, anyway, she does that to try to create a persona, to try to create this paradigm. So I understand why people use things like that, maybe hyperbolic, but anyway, we'll probably have her on so she can talk about, you know, the health freedom, the UN's 2030 agenda, all of these things, and how she's fighting it and what they're doing and creating committees of safety. But what we're doing is we're trying to actually get you to understand the unorganized militia. We'll be right back after this.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and their 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the republic review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how republic review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416.
Okay, so just as we were going into break, I was mentioning, you know, Catherine Duran is trying to create these committees of safety. Well, actually, committees of safety were replaced. It was fundamentally a part of the militia. And they were replaced when our new government formed because we created a representative government. The concept of committees of safety is creating a representative government. So we can't be creating a second government. What we have to do is we have to basically overthrow the sitting people that are violating what, as government, what they should be doing, and getting people to actually go in to do their jobs in government. And so, you know, it's
it's these minor nuances between conservative organizations that I just don't want to necessarily not, you know, let them have their successes and do what they're doing. I think it's kind of good that we have more people in the fight. I think it's more important that, you know, we, you know, try to get people to uniting on the very specific things that we have to do. And so we do have to take back our county. I believe that the sheriff is probably the first guy that we really have to get while we're actually educating people on the roles of the unorganized militia. You call yourself whatever you want. But the Constitution recognizes that all U.S. citizens today, even women, are members of the unconstitutional, or not unconstitutional, I'm sorry, unorganized militia. There are two sides to the militia. There's the unorganized and the organized. Currently, your county has no organized militia. Unorganized doesn't mean you can't be organized. It means that you're not formally the militia for the sheriff and the state. But everybody, if you're not formally a part of the militia formally for the state, then everybody else is in the unorganized militia. Whether you like it or not, whatever you think the militia is you. You are the militia. So getting people to want to accept, embrace that concept, and then getting them active with roles within the county as a part of that unorganized militia, you will start actually starting to function and fire on all cylinders once people start embracing this concept and moving the county to becoming a constitutional county. So anyway, as I was saying, we want to kind of wrap up what we've been covering for this vetoing of the Department of Transportation. So I'm going to pick up right where we left off. And so actually, I'm going to actually go down this path of starting off with what I had just left off. The second, as asserting the simple right to appropriate money from the National Treasury in aid of such works when undertaken by state authorities, surrendering the claim of jurisdiction. In the first view, the question of power is an open one and can be decided without the embarrassments attending to the other arising from the practice of government. Now, his language and the way he, you know, speaks is a little bit different than most. He's kind of like Madison because he's actually, I believe, a lawyer. Anyway, although frequently and strenuously attempted, the power to this extent has never been exercised by the government in a single instance. It does not, in my opinion, possess it. And no bill, therefore, which admits it can receive my official sanction. But in the other view of the power, the question is differently situated. The ground taken at an early period of the government was, quote, that whenever money has been raised by the general authority and is to be applied to a particular measure, a question arises whether the particular measure be within the enumerated authorities vested in Congress. If it be, the money requisite for it may be applied to it. If not, no such application can be made. Okay, so anyway, when we go down, and this is where he mentions Jefferson in paragraph 8. In the administration of Mr. Jefferson, we have two examples of the exercise of the right of appropriation, which in the considerations that led to their adoption and in the effects upon the public mind have had a greater agency in marking the character of the power than any subsequent events. I allude to the payment of $15 million for the purchase of Louisiana and to the original appropriation for the construction of the Cumberland Road. The latter act derived much weight from the acquiescence and approbation of three of the most powerful of the original members of the Confederacy, expressed through their respective legislatures, although the circumstance of the latter case may be such as to deprive so much of it as relates to the actual construction of the road of the force of an obligatory exposition of the Constitution, it must nevertheless be admitted that so far as the mere appropriation money concerned, they present the principle in its most imposing aspect. No less than 23 different laws have been passed through all the forms of the Constitution, appropriating upward of 2.5 million out of the national treasury in support of that improvement with the approbation of every president of the United States, including my predecessor, since his commencement. Paragraph 9. Independently of the sanctions given to appropriations for the Cumberland and other roads and objects under this power, the administration of Mr. Madison was characterized by an act which furnishes the strongest evidence of his opinion of its extent. A bill was passed through both houses of Congress and presented for his approval, quote, setting apart and pledging certain funds for constructing roads and canals and improving the navigation of watercourses in order to facilitate, promote, and give security to internal commerce among the several states and to render more easy and less expensive the means and provisions for the common defense, close quote. Regarding the bill as asserting a power in the federal government to construct roads and canals within the limits of the states in which they were made, he objected to its passage on the ground of its unconstitutionality, declaring that the assent of the respective states in the mode provided by the bill could not confer the power in question, that the only cases in which the consent of session of particular states can extend to the power of Congress are those specified and provided for in the Constitution, and superadding to these avowals his opinion that a restriction of the power to provide for the common defense and general welfare to cases which are to be provided for the expenditure of money would still leave within the legislative power of Congress all of the great and most important measures of government, money being the ordinary necessary means of carrying them into execution, close quote. I have not been able to consider these declarations in any other point of view than as a concession that the right of appropriation is not limited by the power to carry into effect the measure for which the money is asked, as it was formerly contended. The views of Mr. Monroe upon this subject were not left to inference. See, he started talking about Jefferson and talking about Jefferson buying territories, and he didn't talk about the constitutionality of what they were doing, but he basically started with that, and then he went into Madison's presidency and how Madison's presidency clearly declared that these powers do not exist, that the federal government cannot exercise these without an amendment. And then he gets into Monroe here. And he says, I have not been able to consider these declarations in any other point of view than a secession that the right of appropriation is not limited by the power to carry into the effective measure for which the money is asked, as was formerly contended. The views of Mr. Monroe upon this subject were not left to inference. During his administration, a bill was passed through both houses of Congress, conferring the jurisdiction and prescribing the mode by which the federal government should exercise it in the case of the Cumberland Road. He returned it with objection to its passage, and in assigning them, took occasion to say that in the early stages of government, he had inclined to the construction that had no right to expend money except in the performance of acts authorized by the other specific grants of power, according to a strict construction of them, but that on further reflection and observation, his mind has undergone a change, that his opinion then was, quote, that Congress have an unlimited power to raise money and that its appropriation, they have a discretionary power restricted only by the duty to appropriate it to purposes of common defense and of general, not local, national, or state benefit. And this was avowed to be the governing principle through the residue of his administration. The views of the last administration are of such recent date as to render a particular reference to them unnecessary. It is well known that the appropriating power to the utmost extent... Well, we're almost done. We will go back to the views of the last administration moving forward. But again, I'm only doing the highlights out of these 9 pages. So please stay tuned, and we will be right back with more of Jackson's view of how all of these things are unconstitutional in trying to create a Department of Transportation. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic.
To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so let's pick it back up where we left off. The views of the last administration, John Quincy Adams, are of such recent date as to render a particular reference to them unnecessary. It is well known that the appropriating power to the utmost extent has been claimed for it in relation to internal improvements was fully recognized and exercised by it. This brief reference to known facts will be sufficient to show the difficulty, if not the impracticability, of bringing back the operations of the government to the construction of the Constitution set up in 1798. Assuming that to be its true reading in relation to the power under consideration, thus giving the admonitory proof of the force of implication and the necessity of guarding the Constitution with sleepless vigilance against the authority of precedents which have not the sanction of its most plainly defined powers. For although it is the duty of all to look at the sacred instrument instead of the statute book, to repudiate at all times encroachments upon its spirit, which are too apt to be affected by the conjuncture of particular and facilitating circumstances, it is not less true that the public good and the nature of political institutions require that individual differences should yield to a well-settled acquiescence of the people and confederated authorities in particular constructions of the Constitution on doubtful points. Not to concede this much to the spirit of our institutions, but institutions would impair their stability and defeat the objects of the Constitution itself. And so as we move down to the next section, let me see, paragraph 15, no, paragraph 16. Here we go. So paragraph 16, as we kind of look at this, how gratifying the effect of presenting to the world the sublime particular of a republic of more than 12 million happy people in the 54 years of her existence, after having passed through two protracted wars, the one for the acquisition and the other for the maintenance of liberty, free from debt and with all her immense resources unfettered. What a salutary influence would not such an exhibition exercise upon the cause of liberal principles and free government throughout the world? Would we not ourselves find in its effect an additional guarantee that our political institutions will be transmitted to the most remote posterity without decay? A course of policy destined to witness events like these cannot be benefited by a legislation which tolerates a scramble for appropriations that have no relationship to any general system of improvement and whose good effects must of necessity be limited. In the very best view of these appropriations, the abuses to which they lead far exceed the good which they are capable of promoting. They may be resorted to as artful expedients to shift up the government and losses of unsuccessful private speculation, and thus, by ministering to personal ambition and self-aggrandizement, tend to sap the foundation of public virtue and taint the administration of the government with demoralizing influence. In the other view of the subject, in the other view of the subject, and the only remaining one which it is my intention to present at this time, it is involved the expediency of embarking in a system of internal improvements without a previous amendment of the Constitution, explaining and defining the precise powers of the federal government over it, assuming the right to appropriate money to aid in the construction of national works to be warranted by the contemporaneous and continued exposition of the Constitution, its sufficiency for the successful prosecution of them must be admitted by all candid minds. If we look to usage to define the extent of this right, that will be found so variant and embracing so much that as has been overruled to involve the whole subject in great uncertainty and to render the execution of our respective duties in relation to replete with the difficulty and the embarrassment. It is in regard to such works and the acquisition of additional territory that the practice obtained its first footing in most, if not all, the disputed questions of appropriation to the appropriation, the construction of the Constitution may be regarded as unsettled if the right apply money to the enumerated cases is placed on the ground of usage. And so he kind of goes on and we go all the way down to paragraph 17. But I do not entertain such gloomy apprehensions. Here it goes. If it be the wish of the people that the construction of roads and canals should be conducted by the federal government, it is not only highly expedient, but indispensably necessary that a previous amendment of the Constitution delegating the necessary power and defining and restricting its exercise with reference to the sovereignty of states should be made. Without it, nothing extensively useful can be effected. The right to exercise as much jurisdiction as is necessary to preserve the works and to raise funds by the collection of tolls to keep them in repair cannot be dispensed with. Okay? And so that, my friends, right there is basically how he kind of sums it up. I mean, that was 17. There's five more paragraphs that he actually writes to get you all the way down to the ninth page. So I know that you've been, you know, listening and wanting to hear, but you may not want to hear all of those words because he just goes on and on and on and on. Anyway, so the fact of the matter is that Madison basically went through the Constitution and identified the clauses, which there was these presumptions that these clauses would imply these powers. No. The clauses that were referred to, the General Defense and Welfare, Commerce Clause, Necessary and Proper, and Supremacy Clauses, those four, what I call the mystical clauses, only pertain to and they only apply to the enumerated powers. They are not windows or portals to obtaining more power, period. That's how it was discussed. That's how it was defined. That's how the ratification debates, that's how the Constitution was clearly settled through the process of ratifying the Constitution. The Federalist Papers, you know, may be insightful, but the ratification debates clarified exactly what these lines meant and what they were applicable for and nothing more. So when somebody wants to talk about interpreting, the only interpretations that matter that you have to consider first before you add any interpretations outside of these initial terms and definitions, you have to read these terms and definitions first. They weren't even interpreting. They were telling it like it was. This is what this means. So anybody that goes down the path of saying, well, when you read the Constitution, you have to interpret it. No. Actually, all of the definitions were done for us. That's how important the ratification debates are. They are the legal appendages that clarify the Constitution, setting the terms and definitions for us in operating this thing called the Constitution and in dealing with the thing that the Constitution created, our general government. Remember, it is there to serve us. It is not there to oppress us, which is really more what's happening now than anything else. And so as we kind of look at, because I've gone through these powers, right? I kind of listed out these different powers from the Department of Interior, the Justice, Agriculture, Commerce, Labor. I mean, clearly these powers do not exist within the Constitution. For them to start creating and assuming land in states for them to possess as federal property. The only federal property that was delegated to the federal government was for military purposes, forts, magazines, and needful buildings. So when you look at bombing ranges, that is basically like a fort. That's where they do the military testing. They do have, and unfortunately, they didn't utilize, as military expanded, as the military operations expanded, the government needed larger bombing ranges. They needed larger testing and proving grounds. And so constitutionally, I can see that they had to suck up a lot of the Western, you know, different state areas just for this purpose. But the problem is that they've allocated land for each different service. And I honestly believe that there's no reason why these bases, these training grounds like China Lake, 29 Palms, and so forth, maybe Marine, Navy, and Holloman Air Force Base, Air Force, all of these bases need to be consolidated. So when we come back, we'll kind of talk about the lands and operations right after this. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process. As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416.
Okay, so before I go further, before I look, because a lot of times I just don't put it as a big priority to wish somebody a happy birthday. But to all Marines out there, to my fellow Marines, to those who are in the process of joining the Marine Corps, well, once you become a Marine, this will apply to you. But those potentials, that doesn't mean you're a Marine. You're not a Marine until you've finished boot camp. And there's all sorts of really good memes out there that talk about, you know, reverting back to civilian life. Air Force, it takes a couple of hours. Navy, it takes a couple of months. The Army, you know, it takes a couple of years. But Marines, there's no time in hell that is sufficient for a Marine to go back to their civilian. That once they become a Marine, they're always a Marine. And so, happy birthday. Happy birthday, Marines. Hoorah! And I hope that you have a great celebration this year. I reached out to a fellow Marine. He's the chief of police in Spokane. And asked, is there any cake cutting ceremonies? Because, you know, that's the tradition. You can have the oldest and the youngest, and that is a tradition. It wasn't just done at the ball. Because, see, as I served in 20 years, they always did, in formation for the Marine Corps birthday, a cake cutting ceremony. And then there was the formal, you know, cake cutting ceremony for the ball, for the Marine Corps ball. And the reason why they did both is because balls could not accommodate everybody in the command. They only had so many, you know, the venue size was only so big. And so there were a lot of people that were not able to go to the ball, but they believed it was important to celebrate the birthday for all Marines. So there was cake for all. And I cannot believe that the Marine Corps debt doesn't have a formal cake cutting ceremony for the reservists there. Anyway, it is what it is. But I just want you to know that, you know, the America's finest is only because of what they have to go through to get basically the discipline instilled into them to basically become leaders at all levels. Anyway, now what I'm going to do, because I have the time, I've got one whole segment to do. I believe I can read this. I'll just keep an eye on the time. This is a letter from James Madison to John George Jackson, December 27th, 1821, when he was asking for his voluminous proceedings of the convention. And this is what he says, from Montpelier, 27 December 1821. With respect to the portion of Mass which contains the voluminous proceedings of the convention, it has always been my intention that they should some day or other see the light. But I have always felt at the same time the delicacy attending to the use of them, especially at an early season. In general, I have learned the expediency of letting the publication be a posthumous one. The result of my latest reflections on the subject I cannot more conveniently explain than by the enclosed extract from Letter 1, confidentially written since the appearance of the proceedings of the convention as taken from the notes of Chief Justice Yates. And he goes on and kind of calls out Yates for, you know, some of his things and some of the things he says. But what's really important is, as we get down to, you know, the next paragraph, this is what he says. Experiment was to be a blessing to the world. He's talking about the convention. Or to blast forever the hopes which the Republican cause has inspired, and was not to be overlooked the disposition to give a new system all the vigor consistent with the Republican principles was not a little stimulated by backwardness in some quarters towards a convention for the purpose which was ascribed to a secret dislike to popular government, and a hope that delay would bring it more into disgrace and pave the way for a form of government more congenial with monarchical and aristocratical predilections. The view of the crisis made it natural for many in the convention to learn more than was perhaps in strictness warranted by a proper distinction between causes temporary, as some of them doubtless were, and causes permanently inherent in popular frames of government. It is true also that it has been sometimes suggested that the course of discussions in the convention were so much dependent on compromise, the patrons of different opinions often set out to negotiating grounds more remote from each other than the real opinions of either were from the point at what they were finally met. For myself, having from the first movement of maturing a political opinion down to the present one, never ceased to be a votary of the principle of self-government. I was among those most anxious to rescue it from the danger which seemed to threaten it. He's talking about the Articles of Confederation. And with that view, was willing to give to a government resting on the foundation as much energy as would ensure the requisite stability and efficacy. It is possible that in some instances, this consideration may have been allowed a weight greater than subsequent reflection within the convention, or the actual operation of the government would sanction. It may be remarked also that it sometimes happened that opinions as to particular modification or a particular power of the government had a conditional reference to others which combined therewith would vary the character of the whole. Now this, here it is right here. But whatever might have been the opinions entertained in forming the Constitution, it was the duty of all to support it in its true meaning as understood by the nation at the time of its ratification. No one felt this obligation more than I have done, and there are few, perhaps, whose ultimate and deliberate opinions on the merits of the Constitution accord in a greater degree with that obligation. And so he goes on, the departures from the true and fair construction of the instrument has always given me pain. And this is why. Here he points to the ratification debates by saying it was the duty of all to support in its true meaning as understood by the nation of its time of ratification debates. In other words, what those ratification debates, those states that vigorously debated this, they laid it out. Don't interpret. As a matter of fact, this is what he says. The departures from the true and unfair construction of the instrument have always given me pain and always experienced my opposition when called for. The attempts in the outset of government to defeat those safe, if not necessary, and those politic, if not obligatory, amendments introduced in conformity to the known desires of the body of the people, to the pledges of many, particularly myself, when vindicated and recommended the Constitution, was an occurrence not a little ominous. My friends, when we start really looking at everything, that here's a communication from Madison to some citizen asking for those notes. And I'm here to tell you that Madison, when it came down to it, he says, if you really want to understand the Constitution, you have to understand it as it was debated and explained to the states. So why is it that they obscured the ratification debates? Why is it that we have kept these things, our greatest national treasure has been a secret to us? If you want to pick up the fever of understanding the Constitution and being able to tell people how it was defined by the framers. Now, remember this. When you go through the Federalist Papers, they're insightful. But when you go through the ratification debates, these are legally binding. But the only parts that are legally binding are those parts that the Federalist Papers were asserting. The reason why only the Federalist delegates in these ratification debates, the only reason why their assertions, their comments are legally binding is because it was their comments that the states, by vote, accepted. In other words, they rejected the hyperbolic speech and the fear and doom that the anti-federalists were creating and trying to make people, you know, not ratify the Constitution. So it's best when you go through to highlight the Federalist, or I should say the anti-Federalist delegates who are speaking against the Constitution, that here's a problem, like Patrick Henry. Highlight his words in red or a pink or whatever, you know, tone that you can that, you know, is contrary to green. And then when you get to the Federalists or those who are the proponents for the Constitution, highlight them in green and only read the green comments and you'll have a much clearer understanding. But you'll be able to, well, we'll talk more about it later. I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic and we need your help. God bless.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL
or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.